All right. I think we'll continue. Now, Kathy Donaldson is up here with an announcement. Two, I think, actually. So, Kathy, your turn.
Thank you, Mary. Am I on? That sounds like it.
A bit closer, please, Kathy.
Okay.
That's better.
Two important announcements. The first one is that everybody who starts checking out, please go and settle your accounts at the desk. Everything that you owe, we made an exception to the rule and said that you can pay your accounts when you leave. We didn't take anybody's credit card or anything, so we expect you people to do that first, please, or else you're going to have great complications. So everybody that checks out, do that first and go and clear your accounts for me. Secondly, I have good news for you people. I made a promise on Monday, I think, at our function, and I said that people who were interested in it could get a video. Luckily, I can keep my word. There will be videos available that have a DVD on it as well as the photos. And the gentleman who's doing it for us charges 70 rand. So people who want the DVD, please let us have your names at tea time, especially those who are leaving first, because then you will be assured. I told him that we will prioritize. So please, those that want it and are leaving tomorrow, contact us at tea time and you'll get your videos. Have a pleasant afternoon and enjoy the rest of the meeting for today. And then the last thing, please remember tonight, once again, we're going to have a cash bar. There will be wine and juice on the tables. We've arranged for that. But if you want hard tact like me, because I can't do without it, it keeps me strong, then you need cash, please. So please, there will be a cash bar available for those that want to have any other alcohol. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Just to remind us about the print. Now, this is the last announcement about the print that's up the top here. And if it's not taken away by the end of the session, it may disappear altogether. So we have brochures from about the Dorothy Duncan Library in Zimbabwe. We have Jean's report, the UEB Training and Implementation Materials Report. We have the assembly attendance list, the small braille production guidelines. So that's the four things that we've got up here. So please pick them up before the end of today, before 4:15 today. Otherwise, they'll be gone. Now, this afternoon session begins with the report from Phyllis Landon about the UEB Code Maintenance Committee. Then Phyllis is going to take us through the rules that have been added since 2010 rule book. And then we'll close this session and Phyllis will take the chair, Leona will take the minutes, and Phyllis will run a meeting of the Code Maintenance Committee. Streaming will continue. Before we actually start, I believe that there's a call from Bill Poole in the UK. Bill? Pete. Sorry, Pete.
Just a point of clarification. Do you want an initial report from the Resolutions Committee?
Oh, well, if you have an initial report,
of
we'll
course.
Certainly take it.
Of course.
All right, Pete. Thank you.
Should we do that now?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, I would like to sincerely thank the members of the Resolutions Committee for a lot of hard work. We actually have had about 2.5 hours of meetings over the past few days and crafted 11 resolutions for your delectation. In addition to that, people have put in a lot of work to get resolutions. Resolutions have come from all member countries, which is very encouraging. So the resolutions have now been agreed by the committee. They will be produced this afternoon, and they will be available to you as soon as they can be produced. I'm just going to mention the headlines of the resolution, but I'm not going to give you the detail, otherwise you'll start and talk about them, and that will be difficult. The first resolution deals with the World Braille Council and the World Blind Union and our relationship with those organisations. The second resolution concerns our relationship with the DAISY Consortium. The third resolution is about the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and our relationship with the implementation of that through countries. And that's quite a long resolution. That's okay. The fourth one is about the promotion of Braille, and it clearly sets out some areas for us to consider in the promotion of Braille. That's also quite a long one. The fifth one is about outreach, and there are a number of points under that. So I think, in general, before moving on, what I would say is that the balance of these resolutions, I think, take ICEB to a slightly different place. I think previously we've had a very strong focus on code development and issues pertaining to code. This is moving us into the realm of outreach, communication and promotion and developing greater access to Braille. So I think that's the basic principle here. Where did we go? Five is definitely the longest. Thank you, Bill Jolly. It was very interesting because Bill said about another one. He said this resolution's, you know, quite, there's quite a lot of words in it, and we all absolutely erupted because this is the longest by far. Okay, so number six is about the tactile graphics guidelines. The prize goes to Canada for the shortest resolution. Number seven is about the international certification. The proposals around international certification. It's not hard holding a microphone and reading with another hand. Number eight is about educational aids and equipment for Braille production in developing countries. Number nine is modified letters not assigned in UEB. And there'll be an example with each delegation so you can see what we're talking about with this resolution, because we found it quite hard to conceptualise the problem, if you like. So Antoinette very, very kindly produced an example for us, which I think will help in the understanding of that resolution. Number 10 is about refreshable Braille. No surprises, there's one in there. And finally, Number 11 is about labelling and products in labelling of products in Braille. There are a number of items where we thought about having resolutions, but we decided not to, because we think it's going to be very important for the executive to comb the papers and the minutes to agree the various charges for committees. So we took the view that there are a number of issues that we have discussed where there is clearly some activity for us to undertake as ICEB, but not necessarily not necessary for us to have a resolution. So that may be a point you want to consider. So there in outline is the outcome from the resolutions committee.
Thank you very much. I'm reluctant to take questions at this stage because I think we'll be discussing the resolutions tomorrow morning, but in the just in case department, Bill Paul has his hand up.
Yes, I have two questions. One is, which resolution relates to the discussion we had on international certification?
Seven.
Right. And secondly, when exactly do you think we might expect to have copies that we can look at and study at our ease before this discussion takes place tomorrow?
Okay.
We obviously wanted to take any observations from this first report. Mandy and I will just finalise the resolutions. Please understand, the resolutions committee finished 5 seconds before we walked in here, so we've just got a slight job to do to finish the crafting that we've got, and then we'll be passing it to production. So as soon as they can be produced, we can have them available. I suspect it will be probably first thing in the morning. We may have some available for later today, but I don't want to commit the people in production to that. They're working very hard for everybody.
Christo?
Thank you, Mary. I understand the committee isn't going to meet again, so it might be necessary for them to add this. The decisions that were reached in Jean's meeting yesterday afternoon about the use of the ICEF website to centralize information about training and implementation material that's available in the various countries, as well as samples of that material to be uploaded.
Do we need Pete?
That's a very good point. Thanks for that. I think there are a number of instances during this meeting where we've reached some conclusions which, although they do not form resolutions, will most certainly form charges to committees. I would use the music paper as another example of that, where there are some very specific activities that we want people to undertake, which I think as an executive we will frame into charges for committees, and we will monitor how those progress through that structure. So please do not conclude that because there isn't a resolution here, it's not important. It's vitally important. I think we just handle it in a slightly different way, and we use the process of developing a charge to make that happen for us.
Pete, I appreciate that you're going to get these resolutions brailled, but is there a chance that you can also just pop them through on the email for those of us who are clearing email?
To the exec list?
Yes, to the exec list.
Yeah, we'll do that.
One last call, resolutions. Right, let's move on, and thank you very much for that report, Pete. Now, let's move on to Phyllis Landon's Code Maintenance Committee report, please. Thank you, Phyllis.
Thanks, Mary. This is a report of the Code Maintenance Committee. I'm going to be dealing with the formation of the committee, its membership, the role of the observers, our activities over the past 2 years, our future plans, and some words of appreciation. At the 4th General Assembly in Melbourne in 2008, Resolution 11, titled UEB Completion and Maintenance, was passed. In part, it directed the Executive Committee to establish a mechanism to ensure that the ongoing work associated with the maintenance of UEB be carried out efficiently, effectively, and with appropriate stakeholder representation. A charge for the Code Maintenance Committee was produced in July 2009 and is attached as an appendix to my report, but I won't be discussing it. The Code Maintenance Committee, the CMC, was formed at the midterm face-to-face meeting of the ICEB executive in Birmingham in July 2010. I was appointed its chair. Each country that has adopted UEB appoints a member to the CMC. Australia appointed Bruce Maguire, who served until he resigned in November of 2010, and Leona Holloway took his place. I'm the appointment from Canada. New Zealand appointed Maria Stevens. Nigeria appointed Jean Obi, and South Africa appointed Christo de Klerk. When the CMC was formed, the United Kingdom had not yet adopted UEB. In addition, the ICEB president made four appointments: Sheila Armstrong from the United Kingdom, Antoinette Botha from South Africa, Christine Simpson from Australia, and Joe Sullivan from United States. The discussions of the CMC have been greatly enhanced by the participation of observers who have shared their expertise with us. Observers are recommended by the standard-setting body of an ICEB member and approved by me as the CMC chair. Generally, in our discussions, we start with discussions from the CMC members for a reasonable period of time, and then we open it up to input from observers. This is on our email list. Observers do not have a vote and generally do not take part in teleconferences. When this report was written, our observers were all from Australia: Geordie Howell, Josie Howes, Bruce McGuire, Kathy Reason, and Linda Triasmono. In March, we gained observers from the UK: George Bell, James Bowden, Peter Osborne, Stephen Phippen, Bill Poole, Mike Townsend, Richard West, and Mandy White. And I've just recently received a request to add observers from Canada, and I'll be dealing with that after the General Assembly. In addition, all members of the ICEB executive are observers on the CMC listserv. Two teleconferences have been held in September 2010 and November 2011. All other business has been conducted through our email listserv. When the CMC was formed, the former UEB Rules Working Group, which was a subcommittee of the UEB Project Committee, provided a document to us called Referrals, a compilation of work to be done and issues requiring further discussion. This list of their unfinished projects was summarized and prioritized. Along with the charge, it forms the foundation of our work plan. All changes of substance that our committee approves, in particular new symbols and new sections of the rule book, are referred to the Executive Committee for their approval. Our first priority has been to incorporate three outstanding sections into the Rules of Unified English Braille, the rule book. The three sections had been approved in principle by the UEB Project Committee, but were not in a form ready for inclusion in the June 2010 edition of the rule book. Further work has since been done on these sections, and they were circulated as a separate document to the delegates of the General Assembly. Since my report isn't that long, after I will go through the new sections and give you the rationale for their provisions. For now, I'll briefly summarize what they cover. Section 14, Code Switching, provides for indicators to signal to the reader when a non-UEB code is in use. Special provisions have been made for the use of IPA Braille and music code with UEB. Section 15 gives symbols to scan poetry and to indicate the ends of poetic lines when the line-by-line format in print is changed to a linear format in Braille. This section also provides primary and secondary stress signs for pronunciation, and it gives a series of symbols suitable for indicating tonal patterns of speech, for instance, in text for learners of English as a second language. Section 16 provides symbols to draw simple lines using standard Braille cells. Horizontal lines are useful for such things as separating column headings from items in a column, denoting boxed material, and representing the total line in a financial statement. Symbols for vertical and diagonal lines are also given. In addition, Section 16 provides that a sequence of dot fives be used for the guide dots, which allow the reader to track across gaps, for example, in a table of contents or between columns in a table. The goal is to have the next edition of the rulebook ready before the end of this year. Errata for the June 2010 edition have been compiled and the corrections are being made. The symbols list has been updated and will be included as Appendix 2 of the rulebook. There are a few other minor changes that have been suggested and will be incorporated in this edition if we have the time. These include a statement to clarify that capitalization is not considered print ornamentation, and as so often happens, instead of this being a simple matter, it has turned into a great discussion on the listserv, so maybe we won't get anything else done. We'll see. Other objectives are to add the four basic arrows to Section 3 of General Symbols and Indicators, adding a provision that passage indicators may not extend through a switch to another code. In the print edition, adding print symbols to the list of letter modifiers, those are the accents. And we'd like, if we can, to introduce braille symbols for the music accidentals. That's the flat, the natural, and the sharp. And just as an aside, at the Braille SA meeting, which I observed earlier this week, or was it last week, whenever, there was a suggestion from the floor that it would be very helpful to have a list of words showing contraction use. And at the time, my comment was, oh my gosh, I don't want to get into discussions of beret and whether B-E is a syllable or whether you should use the E-R contraction, and everyone has opinions on those difficult words. But then a suggestion was made to me that if we just took the words that are currently used as examples in the rule book and are already well and truly established and without any controversy, and if we arranged those in an alphabetical list, that would be very helpful. And I asked Pasha, who had made the suggestion. She said, absolutely, that would be helpful. And I've spoken to Christine and to Leona, who's very helpful in these kinds of things, and we've agreed that we can probably do that quite easily and add another appendix to our next edition. And then that would be a basis when we have the time to discuss beret and decide somewhere down the road how we should braille it. So that leads us into future plans. The next major priority, after we get this new edition put to bed, will be to incorporate all the technical rules and symbols into the rule book, eliminating the need for the guidelines for technical material as a separate document. And if we have time this afternoon in our meeting, we'll maybe have a more open-end discussion about future plans and what people would like us to do. We've had suggestions that I've got on the to-do list of new symbols, including a similar to symbol, which is three parallel lines in math, and the S-set, which came up in Judy's document as something that we could possibly make an assignment for. In addition, I feel it's important to devise a mechanism to ensure that the CMC can receive questions about UEB and provide considered but timely responses. Sometimes this could involve a decision about how to handle situations that aren't covered in the rule book, and it might be quite a time before we get a new edition out and are able to disseminate that information. So these kinds of things, we need to find a mechanism for communicating these out into the field. And this will be the primary topic for our meeting this afternoon. This is a hard-working committee. There is a lot of reading and proofreading involved. Always amazes me how, at the last minute, you can find new errors in what you've put together. Members have been generous with their time and expertise. I appreciate the careful consideration and fresh perspectives that members have brought to the issues involved. I'd like to extend a special word of appreciation to Christine Simpson for her work in editing the rulebook. While computer technology has enabled us to do so much more than we could have a few years ago, it also presents numerous challenges, especially in producing accurate representations of all the print symbols. And Christine just never gives up until she's found a solution. She and I have exchanged many messages of frustration, particularly about MS Word and all its quirks. Thanks to Leona Holloway for her compilation of the original symbols list and her recent updates to it. Her thoroughness and attention to detail have given us a comprehensive and useful reference tool. Leona also researched the best method of presenting the print symbols for the letter modifiers. I'm especially grateful to Mary Schnackenberg, our president, for her advice, her encouraging words, and her support for me in this new position. Respectfully submitted. I'm very happy to take questions now before I move on to the rules, if there are any. Bill, which P or J? Bill Jolly.
No, me.
Bill Poole. Oh, sorry.
Okay. I note you mentioned the issue of having a word list to assist people with contractions. I do think that's desirable. And if we're going to have it, it seems to me, obviously there are word lists already in existence which can be used as a basis for compiling it, as you said, but it seems to me that we might as well add any list, any words that people are aware of to the list, because that will be a minute proportion of extra things that will be involved. I mean, I think if people feel there are words like the one you mentioned that need to be legislated about, we have to decide what to do about it, and we may have to decide on a principle, which is that the way something is contracted may actually have to depend on aspects of pronunciation which differ from country to country. But that's an issue that I don't want to go into, but it's just an issue. But I do think it's desirable to have such a list. People have always found it helpful in the past.
Phyllis, do you want to respond?
Ideally, and given time, I just want to have something for the next edition, and I think if we, for now, stick to the words that are already in the rule book, it will go very quick. It's just a mechanical process. If we start, like I've got at least three extensive word lists, and what I'm afraid is if we put in a word which I assume is to be contracted in a certain way, you're going to write back as soon as the next edition comes out and says, yes, but Phyllis, I have an issue with this word and that word, and I don't like the way you decided to do that word. And then we will have a word list which is ineffective because it has disagreements. So I'm going for now to just arbitrarily say we'll stick to the example words that are currently in the rule book, and we can work towards a more extensive word list for the next edition. I think that would be a better way to go. Pete.
Two quick things. First of all, to thank you for what I think is an excellent report, and there's one omission in the report, I think, and that's to recognise the incredibly hard work you've put in to chair this group, and I would like to recognise that. I think you really have done a fantastic job of chairing what has been quite a challenging task, I know, in many instances, and actually helping us to understand what we might prioritise in the work ahead. So not only have you chaired, you know, things so far, you've also given us an indication of what might be coming. Second point, and I hope you already know about this, but just to give you the heads up, the Resolution 9, which is coming our way tomorrow, is about modified letters not assigned in UEB, and I think this will require some input from the committee.
Thank you, Pete. Any further questions or comments? All right. Phyllis, do you want to take us through the rules now?
Right. This the rules of UEB is a fairly large document. I'll start by apologizing for the state of the Braille copies. I'm not sure what happened. Maybe I was too hasty and sent the wrong file. I don't know. But Christine tells me that the page numbers are not in their proper position in the Braille edition, but that the document is usable. So my apologies in advance. So if you'll take my elbow, I'll walk you through Sections 14, 15, and 16. Section 14, code switching. We start off with a list of the symbols and the first little section. I'm going cross-eyed looking at my papers around this mic. The first section is code switching indicators, which have been agreed to for quite a while. Then the next, it covers word indicators and passage indicators. The next little section of symbols is code switching indicators for IPA Braille. IPA Braille is a publication that deals with how to represent International Phonetic Alphabet, and it is a separate code. It has its own code switching indicators in it, and we did look at those indicators, and at first we thought, okay, they're not too bad. But then what we found is that in each case, the indicator to go from UEB into IPA caused problems. So what we did in each case was to add a .5 prefix to the indicator that is required by IPA Braille, so that if you're used to using IPA Braille with other codes, you're not going to have a huge disjointed symbol there. It's going to be fairly easy to use. So the first opening indicator is the for the IPA bracket. And what we provided for is that it not only represents a code switch, it also represents the print symbol for the bracket when it is used to open phonetics. The same with the open IPA slash. If we had used the symbol required by IPA, it would have just been the same as the acute accent, which could have caused all sorts of problems. So by adding the .5 prefix, we've removed any ambiguity. The general opening IPA indicator would have represented a grade 1 symbol indicator plus a semicolon in UEB. So again, the .5 prefix nicely resolved that. Then we have the code switching indicators for music Braille. And again, we looked at these to see whether we could use what was already in the music code. At first, we had some concerns. The opening one is .63. That, of course, is the same as the UEB symbol for a capitals terminator. But in actual fact, the capitals terminator will always be at the end of a sequence, whereas the opening music indicator should always follow a space. So there shouldn't be any ambiguity. So we were able to adopt that as a UEB symbol. And just a word about the closing symbols. What we're assuming is that once you're in IPA or music, then you are reading that code, so the symbols to come back into UEB can use respectively the IPA switches and the music switch. Then comes a long section of symbols that are used in this section that are not UEB symbols. They're from some other code. So this is for information so that you can read the examples. The first part of section 14 gives the purpose of code switching. The second part deals with when to use code switching indicators. This was tricky. We found that some readers don't want a plethora of indicators. When it's very obvious to them that another code is being used. On the other hand, we heard from readers who are using electronic braille files, or they want to do translation from braille to print, who felt that code switch indicators should be always used, that they were absolutely essential. So we hope that we've achieved the right balance between those two points of view. So I'll just skip through the next part and leave you to read that on your own. Then the third part is how to use the code switching indicators. We deal first with the word indicators,